Welcome to the Humanist Union of Madison meeting for August. Pleased to welcome Ingrid Lass, photographer of note, who is going to give a photographic report on an amazing meeting in Las Vegas. I was just curious, how many of you heard about this through the Madison Skeptics? Go ahead.
Hi everyone. I think, you know, if we haven't met in person or spoken really, I think I recognize at least some of you from participating in some events here at the Humanist Union, and I really appreciate the fact that you found this of interest. So thank you for having me. I've been a little overwhelmed in the last couple of weeks with a number of things going on, so when it came down to doing this program, I decided to keep it very simple. I'm just going to keep the slideshow going and explain a few things and then take questions. So please feel free to jump in, ask me a question, hey, what's going on here, hey, you know, what's this, or if you have photographic questions, I'm more than happy to try and answer them. The Amazing Meeting, if you're not already familiar with it, is an event that's sponsored annually, and now it's actually happening a number of times each year by the James Randi Educational Foundation. Is anyone not at all familiar with the James Randi Educational Foundation? Okay. I ran some things off of Wikipedia and other sources this morning. I'm going to pass it around. But essentially, the James Randi Educational Foundation is a nonprofit that James Randi, who's a magician, famous. If you're in that, you know, area, or you have an interest in magicians and, you know, shows or, you know, things of that nature, you would probably know who he is. But he also has really made a huge name for himself in the area of skepticism, critical thinking, you know, things of that nature. And essentially what he does, hold on just one second, I need to look at what I should perhaps pass around first here. Essentially what the Educational Foundation has been set up to do, or the goal that they have is to kind of like debunk basically people who take advantage of other people in the names of, doing it by pseudoscience, promoting certain worldviews that honestly, you know, it's hard to describe. I'll pass this out and you guys can like figure it out. So in any case, that's kind of a Wikipedia article. But yeah, I mean, essentially and here's the program for TAM-8. So this is, as I said, the eighth year that this is taking place, but it's grown from a very small event where they had 250 people meeting at the first TAM to now they have 1,300 in Las Vegas this year. So, and in addition to that, they are also going to have TAM London, which is taking place in September, and they also have one going on in Australia. So, essentially, it's kind of a celebration of skepticism, critical thinking, and trying to further that sort of scientific literacy, literacy among people. And a lot of the people you're seeing on the screen right now, that's Rebecca Watson. She's a commentator with the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, which if you listen to podcasts along those lines, her name might be one that you recognize. But these people often aren't in front of the camera. Well, it's not to say they're strangers to being in front of the camera, but rather because they have podcasts and that sort of thing, or, you know, things that people listen to, you don't necessarily recognize their faces. So in any case, about 6 weeks prior to this event, TAM in Las Vegas this year, I just contacted J-Rep to ask if they, I wanted to attend regardless. Would they mind if I brought along a camera or two and took some pictures? And they said that was fine with them. So that's kind of how I got there. it turns out I took lots and lots and lots of pictures. I think I came home with over 2,000 images and I got it down to 1,000. I'm sorry, I'm a photojournalistic shooter, kind of cut my teeth on wedding photography, and especially once things went digital, you know, it's kind of like you weren't thinking about every click is a piece of film that you're going to have to pay to get processed and approved, you know, whatnot. So, you know, digital just kind of fed that for photojournalistic sort of thing. The back end of that, or the downside to that, is that you end up spending a heck of a lot of time on the computer going through all those images, editing, color correcting, in some cases doing Photoshop. In this case, the color on the screen up there isn't quite as true as to what's on my monitor, I'm afraid. And it also makes it look a little bit not so sharp. But in any case, you just end up spending lots and lots of time on the computer, but it's hard for me to hold myself back regardless. So, and let's see, this was a very strange activity. Hopefully you'll find it entertaining. At first, even when Rebecca, who initiated this activity, presented it to the room full of people, this was part of a workshop, it was on women and skepticism. She had the Angry Vagina Craft Project that she introduced people to. And people, like there was probably a room of about 200 people. They had two workshops going on concurrently. And it was fairly evenly divided who went to which workshop. But in any case, they handed out pieces of felt and tape and glue and glitter, and then people made angry vaginas. I know it sounds strange. It took people, honestly, there was a, like just a pall of silence. I mean, the room just went silent when the activity was introduced. But within about 10 minutes, people were talking because there were also some things that had to do with answering. This is the winning team of the angry vaginas. So, and this is, it was kind of a skeptics. Now, Rebecca is a skeptic blogger, and the four ladies who are shown with her are also women bloggers who are part of skeptics. And this actually is fairly important, and I'm sorry, this is going to be really stream of consciousness now that I'm looking at the pictures. But the lack of women at TAM events and in skepticism and that sort of thing in general is something that people have taken note of. So they were trying to actively, the organizers are trying to actively make sure that they've got women panelists, presenters, and also are trying to increase the number of women who are attending TAM and these sorts of functions. So, like I said, anybody jump in with questions at any point.
Who is the man with the beard?
That is James Randi. So this is that evening, this is Thursday evening, and this is kind of quote-unquote, their press conference, where he and Richard Dawkins, who was the keynote speaker this year, attended. Michael Shermer and the Skeptics Society actually was co-sponsor of TAM this year. I know some of you are probably familiar with him also from him having been here in Madison. Yeah, believe it or not, I mean, there actually were some exercises they did for the Angry Vagina Craft Time that segued very well into that. So, you know, at first I think people really were taken aback, like, what the heck is Rebecca getting us into?
Yeah. Lots Can you of tell us which one is Richard Dawkins when he comes up?
Sure. The one on the right, the one on the right is Richard Dawkins, and left is James Randi.
Good.
Yeah, James Randi. So this is kind of like the first evening of the conference. It's a little press conference they had. I got there slightly late, and because I didn't know how things were scheduled to run, to be honest. It said it was a reception. So I thought, oh, a reception. You know, you have a half hour of drinks, and I have, or you know, you drink for a while, and a half hour later they start doing a presentation or something. Well, the presentation started right away. And so I did quick unpack my camera gear and stuff like that, and then I looked for creative angles. It's like, okay, you want to see how many people were there? A lot of people were there. It was very crowded. So I just tried to get some angles that other people weren't thinking of and that sort of thing. But you can see there are like no lack of people there, you know, highly interested in a lot of other photogs as well. So, but I, as you can see, I take a lot of pictures, and just because I like the way expressions sometimes change from moment to moment and that sort of thing. And then they ended up ended with a little bit of music. And then I went back to my room and downloaded cards because I was like running out of cards really quickly at that point. Next morning, Michael Shermer started off with one of his talks. Actually, I think it was the same one that he gave here, Why People Believe Weird Things. So this is Friday morning, and that's about what 1,300 people crammed into a giant ballroom looked like. Phil
Do you
played.
Know the attendance?
The attendance?
Do you know how many were there?
About 1,300.
1,300.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with how many young people there are.
Yeah, and that's something too. People were taking note, or you know, just a little bit of what I was overhearing from other people. It's like, you know, wow, it's nice that we, you know, did have a range of ages. And yeah, the attendance of women was probably 40% women, 60% men, something around there. So maybe there does seem to be some evidence that they're successfully reaching out to getting people to be interested in these sorts of things that they haven't in the past. Because I think in the past, it really, this movement, the skeptical movement, or whatever you want to call it, has a reputation for being rather male-dominated. So it's nice to see that there's a bit of balance coming in there. So here I'm warming up because I hadn't shot in this location before, and later on you'll see I did different angles and stuff. But anyway, so TAM 8, yeah, you've got these huge screens. It kind of looks like, I don't know if you remember that. Oh, Sean Fairclough. I'm sure a lot of you will, that name might mean something to you because he was in this very room about a year ago or three quarters of a year ago. So Michael Shermer was there and Sean Fairclough was there, and those were the first two speakers on Friday. The other people we have not had here to my knowledge, but who knows, maybe some of them will come to Madison at some point. And what I found kind of interesting, I feel like I'm rambling, please anybody jump in with questions.
You haven't repeated yourself yet.
I'll try harder then.
What's the significance of that 8?
Just because it's the 8th year that the amazing meeting has taken place. So that was the logo, I guess, they came up with, the 8-ball logo. And what I was really struck by, just me as a casual observer, is this really almost looked like a political convention. And it seems very appropriate to have Sean Fairclough, a former politician himself, actually on this big screen. And I don't know, I mean, it was visually, from my point of view, just really striking, you know, what this event was all about.
If there were 1,300 people in the hall, did the gathering result in any protests or literature distribution outside the hall?
No protests or anything like that. Let's see. This young gentleman in the middle is actually looking to run it off for office, and that's why Sean Fairclough that pulls in with this guy, Mike Meyer or Mike McKay. No protests, but there were a couple of people there who came from different parts of the world. One gentleman even from Australia to ask, I think it was Phil Plait, who's another person who's kind of like a podcast. Well, yeah, he's known for bad astronomy or bad astronomer. No, that's kind of like his thing. And so he's an astronomer, but he's pretty prominent on the skepticism, so, you know, social critical thinking scene. And there was somebody who had to ask him a question, or rather said, you know, the moon landings really did not take place. So we kind of got a couple of interesting people who were believers in this sort of woo-ish, you know, stuff that mainstream people are like, no, there's no conspiracy, you know, these things, you know. Yeah, so that's kind of like the sort of thing that people like, the organizers of TAM are trying to address, you know, why do people believe these strange things, trying to debunk, you know, that sort of, some of these notions, and get people to really think critically. And that ranges, okay, next we've got, let's see, I think this is Women in Skepticism, which is separate from the vagina thing, crafting. But, yeah, so here, these six women were, yeah, six. They're all prominent authors or, you know, somehow known, and so they were addressing women in skepticism. A number of these, a couple of them at least, are doctors. So, yeah, I mean, skeptical thinking, you know, affects people from, you know, do you spend money on, you know, getting your tarot read or something like that? Or to beliefs about homeopathy, you know, does that work or does it not work? You know, it's that sort of critical thinking that they're trying to bring.
Somebody else already drank out of that.
This is Jamie Ian Smith. He's a fairly well-known magician as well, so he was the one who got to interview James Randi again here.
He must be seriously old by now.
Yeah, he's 81. He's had some serious health issues in the last couple of years. So it was actually very good to see that he's doing as well as he is. Because he's had a battle with heart disease and also cancer. And last year, he was in a wheelchair because he had just undergone chemotherapy.
Is it true that most of the professional magicians in the country work in or around Las Vegas? That's what I've heard.
I wouldn't be surprised. Uh-huh. That would seem to be the place to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know how many of you have ever been to Las Vegas or have an interest in going there, but it is kind of a weird place. A friend of mine and I, who I know from the Chicago area, I didn't see any other Madison people there. And it's kind of like, oh. But in any case, yeah, I mean, I've made some connections in the Chicago area, so I hung out with them for a little bit. Yeah, we went down on the strip, you know, just kind of took in the sights. You know, neither of us were into gambling. In fact, that was kind of funny. Apparently, South Point, where this convention took place, they're kind of disappointed. Well, of course, you know, you can't turn down a convention of 1,300 people, or you wouldn't want to. But the problem that they have with us is that we don't gamble enough. So we're skeptics. We know the odds. We know they're not good. They're not in our favor. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, you can calculate what your odds are.
Yeah.
They all favor the house.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. In the long run, they're much more inclined to lose than win.
So, is this event always in Las Vegas, or does it travel around?
Well, it's
this particular event is always in Las Vegas. Yeah.
So far, it is. Although, as I mentioned, they're going to be having one later this year in London and another one in Sydney, Australia.
That's really convenient, yes.
Well, you know, Las Vegas does, I mean, it's a good place to, you know, they're cut out for this sort of thing. And I guess I've had a few conversations with people on the organizing side of end of things here that they said maybe they want to expand it and have one on the East Coast as well as the West Coast. But Las Vegas kind of seems to be home to it at this point. Mm-hmm.
There's direct flights right to Milwaukee to Bellevue, Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
It's all set up where you come there and stay for a couple days and leave.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't have to leave the hotel for anything.
I mean, there's not a lot of places that can accommodate something that large.
Right.
I mean, that limits the cities anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this is Simon Singh, by the way. He's known for his book, Trick or Treatment, discussing the effectiveness of alternative medicine remedies. And he was sued by the, like, English Chiropractors Association or something like that because he, you know, said some things that they didn't like about chiropractic care. They sued him, he won. So bravo for him. He's kind of considered a hero, and I love his hair.
He was sued in the United Kingdom.
He's from the United Kingdom, and he wrote a book there, and then was sued for libel.
There?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and the lawsuit had all sorts of nuances that I don't even remember.
I apologize. I'm an attorney. In England, if you lose or if you win your lawsuit, your opponent has to pay for your legal defense. We don't have that here, but that's an extra good thing.
Okay, yeah.
Libel laws are different too.
Yeah, their libel laws are much stricter.
It's much more easy to have somebody say, you've libeled me, and that was the whole issue, and they're international. This is Joe Nickel. And Barb, I'm sorry, you asked me a question before, and I was going to jump to that right after saying this is silencing.
Go ahead.
And
I was just commenting that there's not a lot of cities that can accommodate 1,500 people.
Yeah, not easily. Not easily, yeah.
So that's probably one of the reasons, although it's grown hugely. I mean, it wasn't used to be 1,300 people.
Oh, the event itself? Well, they're thinking that they might be outgrowing this location in the near future.
There are a lot of con men in Las Vegas, and I suspect con men sort of attract skeptics, too.
Well, I think the skeptics would give them quite a run for their money, but I mean, we're just too savvy, you know, but this is Adam Savage from Mythbusters. I don't know, a lot of people seem to recognize him, but yeah, in terms of conference sizes, actually, something that was happening just after TAM went on, and I think it just finished a couple days ago, is Comic-Con. And that event has 120,000 people who attend in San Diego. I mean, when I learned that, you know, it put the whole conference thing into perspective. It's like, oh, TAM is teeny.
What's Comic-Con?
It's a convention. I think it's been going on since the early 70s. Comedians and other people, I'm on Facebook quite a bit.
Comic-Con, more of the science fiction fantasy crowd.
Oh, thank you.
Get collected. It's getting very popular with to advertise what's coming up in the movies for the next year or so.
Right.
So if you go on any science fiction website while it's going on, it's like, this preview was shown at Comic-Con.
Yeah, the state meeting gets a lot of publicity here.
Hmm?
When the state organization that deals with that meets in Madison, that always gets a lot of publicity, the sci-fi crowd and all that.
Some.
Hmm. So, yeah, I guess it's really relative. I mean, you know, yes, it does look like practically a political convention. And like this guy, I think, was he the moon debater guy? I don't know, but in any case. It was kind of hogging Adam Savage's attention for a little while, I guess. But yeah, I mean, you look at the pictures and it's like, oh my gosh, this is like a political rally, and then it's like you put it into perspective with something like Comic-Con or whatever, and you know, it's like, it's small.
Do they vote on resolutions, pass resolutions of various sorts?
No, to my knowledge, there are no meetings like that, no board of director meetings at this sort of thing. I think the James Randi Educational Foundation is, you know, they conduct their business elsewhere, and yeah, actually, it's amazing that they pull off this event. The staff is spread all around the country, and somebody even looks in Canada.
Are there like vendors' booths, people pushing their latest books and magazines and that sort of thing?
There are a few. Let's see, one woman. Well, there's somebody who's been part of this for some time. She's one of the skeptics bloggers and. She also has a ceramic jewelry business, and because what she produces actually ties in, like, she's got everything from scientific symbols on to, you know, like little skeptical slogans, it makes sense that she's there.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, people who have books, well, Richard Dawkins did some book signing in the hallway, you know, for a couple of hours one evening. The Skeptic Society had tables there because they were also co-sponsoring, some books and magazines.
It's a way to get these guys to come to the meetings.
Yeah, and there does seem to be Pamela Gay. She is an astronomer, and actually this is something also kind of interesting, although it's hard for me to say a whole lot because I'm not sure who all the players are yet, but apparently they're Phil Plait, who was one of the presenters, gave a talk about a half hour, there he is, about the movement being inclusive. And he's trying to say, you know, how many times have you changed your mind because, you know, somebody told you you were stupid or, you know, something like that. And I think that was kind of, apparently somebody got insulted at a previous meeting just about the attitude of some of the skeptical types and stuff like that. And so basically he was at the meeting this year saying, we've got to reach out to people. I mean, we're small, you know, we need friends, not enemies. So let's watch how we say things. And that was the theme of his talk. Yeah, like I said, the movement does seem to, movement if you want to call it that, it's pretty small, but I think the leadership, the best leadership, is really making a conscious effort to say, okay, you know, we happen to think we're pretty smart. Maybe we are. Maybe we're right almost, you know, most of the time or almost all the time. But, you know, how do we get people to come along with us? And, you know, because you know, this crowd is full of atheists. Not all of them, but, you know, lots and lots of atheists in it. And sometimes, you know, I think the discussions are unfortunately polarized in a way that these people may not mean badly, but, you know, we alienate people. And I'm not even saying me as, or we as an atheist. I don't, you know, I'm agnostic, really, if you push me on it. Yeah, but, you know, I just prefer not to even try and address those two questions in the same sort of thought. That doesn't work for me. But it's just interesting because Richard Dawkins, I think this is the second time at least that he's been the keynote speaker. And, you know, I really only read any of his work about a year and a half ago. And before that, I mean, I knew who he was, but I thought, oh, he's an angry atheist. And, you know, kind of the reputation of the new atheists. And it wasn't until I read his work that I was kind of like, wow, he's so well-reasoned. He sounds reasonable. Or, you know, it's kind of like for us folks in the skeptical crowd, because I think so many people think we're all atheists, which, like I said, isn't necessarily the case. There's a real barrier to break down there because there are a lot of preconceived notions, and this is my take on it. This is completely my take on it. But, you know, it's almost like your reputation precedes you, and it doesn't make for good bridge building and, you know, people that you might want to work with on whatever it is, you know, how to solve the world's problems. They had a panel on climate change and the debate going on in that area. I mean, these are people who are concerned about the state of humanity, I guess you could say, who feel they have a worthwhile message, who feel that science is the best way to achieve that something that's better for humanity and the world in general. So the question is, how do you start reaching out to other people so that, you know, they don't have a preconceived notion of who you are already and that you're going to be negative and you're going to criticize and tear down their, you know, to, you know, important things that are important to them, i.e., you know, if they have religious belief. You know, there are a lot of people out there who have religious belief of one manner, shape, or form, and, you know, and yet you have more in common with them than you have, you know, don't have in common with them. So I just found it kind of interesting in that the leadership, the best of the leadership, Eugenie Scott, National Science for Council for Science Education, showed up for 10 minutes to say hi. So I think the leadership is recognizing you want to be a bridge builder to achieve these bigger goals. DJ Grothy, Center for Inquiry, past president, I think. He is now the president of the James Randi Educational Foundation, taking over from Phil Plait, and Phil Plait took over for James Randi, but Phil Plait ended up having a TV project that came through, and that's, I guess, apparently why leadership was again changed within the last 2 years.
I'm sure we all miss Martin Gardner. I understand he was religious, wasn't he?
By the time James Randi split with the Center for Skeptical Inquiry, which used to be SkyCop, which Martin Gardner was a founder of, Martin Gardner was pretty much on his way to death's door by the time James Randi split with the Center for Skeptical Inquiry.
They had a video clip from Martin Gardner, who died 2 months ago, I think it is, or so. And I mean, they knew that he wasn't going to be around for TAM this year. But yeah, and so in any case, Martin Gardner is somebody who's definitely noted, and, you know, especially in light of his passing and all.
He was founded with the original group PsyCop.
These are also actually some of the kind of historical big names. And I'll see if I can get them right. I'm not sure. I think on the right is Ray Hyman.
Paul Kurtz next to James Randi.
Yep, Paul Kurtz is there. James Randi. And then the other gentleman, I would need to look at some of the printed material I have. And Paul Kurtz is getting an award of recognition from Randi.
Are these conferences attended by almost 100% of Americans or much international?
It's a pretty, if you look out across the crowd, you know, now we, I mean, look, this was my first TAM, so I can't say historically what's been the case, but it seems to me there is a nice mix of ages, and it's becoming more equal in terms of women and men, but in terms of people who aren't Caucasian the way most of us are, it looks pretty monolithic right now. There were a few people, there were a number of Canadians I ran into.
Both groups have been doing very good at reaching across international borders and setting up things within the own country, including places like Russia and China. But getting them to come to American meetings is another question. Cost, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, basically it was mostly North Americans. There were a couple of Aussies there, but otherwise not a whole lot of people. I mean, you know, if people came, they were from English-speaking countries, which isn't too surprising, but
Tom,
yeah.
Coach James Randy, Ray Hyman, and I don't know the other guy.
Yeah, I wish I knew it at one point. You know, will they expand into other parts of Europe now that they also have one going in London? Perhaps, that would be cool. Yeah, there's potentially a language barrier there in that. I guess most of the people who are, you know, leaders in the movement probably are best giving their talks in English, so you can have to, I don't know, I haven't even thought about that, so, yeah.
The Italian there, Massimo, what's his name?
Oh, Massimo Pigliucci, yeah, I think that's how you say his name. Well, he surprised me by how he said it, because he's, this is Skeptic's Guide to the Universe panel, so here I have a long lens shooting from the side, and I just like to change my focus a little bit, and so you get expressions. But yeah, so Massimo, when he said his name, he said it with that sort of stress. I was surprised how he pronounced it.
The American. Is he American or Japanese?
Well, he was apparently born in Italy, and but now he has a teaching position in New York at NYU. Maybe, I can't remember for sure.
Is it SUNY?
I don't want to know. It might be SUNY. These are people. It's kind of funny because. Well, for one thing, I felt like I recognized a lot of people there because I follow most of these people, like the people who were on panels and stuff, on Facebook, you know, and their friend. And so, you know, their little profile picture comes up every time they post something. And then being behind the camera here, it's like you almost feel like you get to know them. And yet if I were to walk up to them like, hi, how you doing? They'd be like, who are you? More questions.
What are your favorite topics that they talked about?
Okay, Massimo also was, Pigliucci was, he gave a real bridge building talk as well about, so Phil Plait and Massimo and, there's one other person who, oh, Sean Fairclough's. I really like Sean Fairclough's talk because again, it was, I know, Sean, that's Massimo. I only know Sean from here that one time that he was here, and then we hung out at the Great Dane afterwards. But I just remember his talk being also, I tend to be kind of, I don't not some, maybe centrist, but I think of myself more as a bridge builder, or, you know, I like reaching out to people. So consequently, I guess those talks specifically spoke to me. But I thought all of them were good. The unfortunate thing is I ended up being behind the camera so much, and you know, you're looking for good angles and different composition and yada yada. I'm afraid I didn't absorb a whole lot of the talks. I mean, there were times when I paused and listened, but to a certain degree I was shooting pretty quickly, and that's where a lot of my focus was mentally. Yes.
Since this is the eighth, presumably the conferences at least break even, if not make money. And the question then becomes, what's the price tag on attending?
I know nothing about, you know, how much money these conferences make for JREF or anything like that. But I'm assuming if they keep offering them, they can't always be losing money. And they are growing. Let's see, how much was it? $430 to enter, basic entrance fee, and that includes your meals, like breakfast and lunch, buffet. Okay. They would have like a bunch, you know, buffet meals for people. And the workshops were a little bit extra, like $100 extra if you wanted to a whole day's pass for the workshops. There were 8 workshops in total, 2 always running concurrently.
How many days did it go on?
It's 4 days total. It was July 8th through 11th. Oh, there's some workshops on Sunday. So the first day consisted of workshops and that sort of thing, and the last day, which was Sunday. And I cannot remember for sure, to be honest, you know, what the entire breakdown is, but I think, you know, if you wanted to attend everything, it would be about $650. This panel was talking about grassroots skeptical organizing and that sort of thing. This is one where I ended up taking a lot of pictures, and in hindsight, I wish I would have heard more. So they do record these. So I think in the past they've charged for people, or like you had to buy DVDs if you wanted to see the programs again and that sort of thing. But I think they're releasing them now. I don't know this for a fact. But I think they're releasing them now online on YouTube and stuff like that. So hopefully when those become available, I'll find them and be able to listen to them. And actually the woman up there is Jennifer Newport. She's kind of a friend now, because I went down to Chicago to see a couple, or you know, take part in a couple things down there, and she's very nice. So. For the life of me, I cannot remember the moderator's name. I was trying to come up with that before, but if I were to see it, I would be like, oh yeah, that's so-and-so, or that's who he is. But.
Questions?
I got kind of gutsy. Okay, the first day I was there, the people there just said kind of like, well, if you want to photograph some of the workshops. They weren't sure what to do with me exactly, I guess. So I photographed the workshops, and I was jumping back and between the different workshops. The second day I was there, the speaker started, and it took me a while to, you know, find out what is okay, like, you know, where should I move, and, you know, where shouldn't I move? I didn't want to be distracting to anyone. By the third day, I was going up, I was sneaking backstage and getting these shots because I thought, you know, it would be really cool with my long lens because it compresses depth of field and that sort of thing. It would be really cool if I can shoot from behind stage and do this stuff. And by the time Richard Dawkins was there, I just didn't catch very much of his talk, to be honest. It's really embarrassing because I was kind of focusing on trying to get artsy shots. So
are you
that's where my
is that a freelance assignment, or are you just doing this for your own?
A bit of both. So JREF will have access to the images, but yeah, I was kind
of you're selling some of the fiction because they're some of them just great.
Thanks.
Was there any media coverage?
They had some people from various podcasts come to interview people, and I don't know if they got a whole lot of TV coverage, though. I mean, you know, Las Vegas being one of those places where so much is going on, they had like 15 to 20 bloggers there who were live blogging from the event.
Articles and newspapers?
There are a few. I mean, if you're really interested, I can.
Well,
you know,
just wondering how much coverage it might have gotten.
I don't think any of the, you know, like more traditional press for the most part. There was somebody from the Las Vegas Review or something like that who did a very nice article. And, you know, kind of took a look at what was going on here from the outsider's perspective, in that, well, you may have never heard of the skeptical movement, but these are who the major players are and that sort of thing, and it was a very nice article. But for the most part, I haven't seen any media coverage that, you know, in a more general sort of, you know, kind of traditional, or mainstream, you know, kind of like New York Times or, you know, even, even a mainstream paper in Las Vegas probably wouldn't be covering this. But there were a lot of people with, you know, again, like I said, the bloggers and stuff. Those people were all there and live blogging, and people within the movement were there and took note.
Probably a lot of informal stuff on the web.
Informal stuff, or
yeah, blogs.
Oh, informal on
the internet. Yeah. Blogs.
Blogs.
Yeah. Blogs are almost formal, I would say, in a certain, depends on who it is.
Well, I mean, they're not. They're not reporters from a newspaper or something.
Yeah. I mean, most people have their following. But yeah, it's not like.
Anybody
not CNN sort of outreach or anything.
Presumably the podcasters did interviews which they will make available on the internet in their podcasts.
Yeah, if they haven't already. There seemed to have been a lot of stuff put out there. And after I got back, or Robert, you apparently knew I was there because you saw a picture of me on Facebook that a friend snapped with his iPhone. And I'm like, I hate being in front of the camera, so slightly horrified, but I got over it. There was this constant stream of pictures and commentary about TAM. You know, when I got back online, it took like 2 weeks for it to run its full course. So, yeah, and these pictures, I first want to talk a little bit more to some people who are the organizers of TAM, and just clear things with them before anything goes online. It's too many images. It's, you know, I don't know what they need to tell me what they want to do with them. So this is a panel of skepticism in medicine, if I'm not mistaken. So Rachel Dunlop, Dr. Rachy is on the left, and then that's Harriet Hall, Ginger Campbell. Remember the other gentleman, Steve Novella. He's a medical doctor, part of Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, but he's pretty well known in that regard. And Simon Singh on the far end, of course. And there's just one shot here. I couldn't help but leave it in. The only thing that's in focus is Simon's hair. It's not this one. I think it's the next one.
Medical condition for him, or is that fashion statement?
I certainly hope it's fashion statement. not there yet. So I don't know. I mean, at this point, I was kind of spoiled. A good friend of mine had some lenses that were far better than what I had, and because I had to borrow some equipment to, you know, or I wanted to borrow some because I knew that, you know, under the lighting circumstances and so on, some of my equipment wasn't quite what it should be.
How far were you from the people when you took the shot?
Oh, a good 50 feet from him. And I mean, I had a 70 to 200 lens. So that really did gave you that feeling of being right up next to them practically. But I was probably about 15 feet from Simon at the very end. So, you know, nobody ever said I was distracting. I mean, I tried very hard not to be distracting, so.
Yeah, it makes you feel like you're right there. The pictures
are wonderful.
Yeah.
Hey.
Great lens.
Yeah, yeah, I wouldn't.
Be nice to that friend.
Yes, yes. Maintain that relationship, yes. Blog is science now, or? Well, she also does something called Rationally Speaking, if I'm not mistaken, with Massimo Pigliucci. So, anyway.
Are you going to go back again?
I hope so.
So it was generally a very positive experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very much so. I mean, it exceeded my expectations by a long shot. I really didn't know what to expect, but it was... one thing I noticed about Randy, if you look at a number of these shots, you'll notice that this man is very, very proud of his eyebrows. it's kind of funny because when you have a lens, you know, like I had, and you zoom in on somebody, it's like, wow, those are great eyebrows. But anyway.
All the hair fell off his head and down to his eyebrows.
I hope if he ever heard me say it, he would understand that that is meant in the nicest sort of way. Yeah, he does look a little bit like Charles Darwin, just a little bit shorter. And this is a panel on the paranormal and skepticism. So Karen Stolz now is the lady, the woman on the panel there, kind of in the middle. Ben Radford is closest to us than Joe Nicola again. And of course, you know the guy at the end now. Yes, the Darwin lookalike almost.
Why would this group talk about paranormal?
Because that's kind of what they're into, trying to debunk. And I don't know if you know who Sylvia Brown is, or John Edward, I think. There are people who, you know, claim that they can speak to the, you know, your loved ones who have gone on, and, you know, and they make money and over tips doing it. I mean, they're ripping people off, essentially, is what these people would argue, you know. They don't have credence in that sort of thing. Oh, and, okay, yeah, I don't know how much longer this is going to cycle through until we get to Sunday evening, otherwise I can jump ahead here in just a second. But James Randi is also known for the Million Dollar Challenge, which first started out as kind of a, I guess I was just reading about it, it was like a $100 challenge. Somebody made some sort of claim about, I can do this, something that was kind of a paranormal thing or whatever, and he's like, Randy offered, quote unquote, when he didn't even know if he had $100. If you can prove it to me, I'll, you know, you can have $100. And so in any case, well, the gentleman who made this claim, whatever it was, wasn't able to prove it. And then the challenge kept going up in terms of money. And finally, there has apparently been an anonymous donor who allows them to now offer $1 million if you can prove something like I can read minds or communicate with the dead, or you can douse for water and really do that. If you can prove it, you get the $1 million. Well, they've had over 1,000 people who have applied for this, and there's a rather rigorous set of guidelines now that you have to go through, because otherwise, you know, with so many people applying to win this $1 million, you know, you have to kind of know that this person is really pretty serious. Well, the $1 million has never been won. So,
James Randi was a professional magician who got infuriated by seeing psychics say this is really mystical and that, and recognizing them as basic magician tricks. So, his claim to fame was to go on Johnny Carson and start tackling a guy by the name of Uri Geller.
Oh, yeah.
Who said he invented his spoons with his mind. And this is a common magician trick according to James Randi, and he got really irritated at people doing this, because of taking the magician skill and trying to turn it into something else, and plus probably being paid about 3 to 4 times as much money to do this mystical thing. So we went on Johnny Carson, who Johnny Carson was a friend of Randi, magician friend. And basically he bumped Uri Geller. Now, at the time, he was working with the co-founding group, the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Things of Paranormal. But he kept confronting the psychics who were using magician tricks, including that one I saw on Johnny Carson, where he was demonstrating how people with psychic surgery could go on, which was a hit in Brazil at the time, and getting sued royally, which cost an awful lot of money to have that thing back in Europe. So he had a split with the psychic Committee for Scientific Claims of Psychop, because he kept getting so much sued that the psychop just couldn't handle coping with all the funds needed to sue this guy. So he split, he organized his own foundation, and now he's been doing these meetings for about 8 years.
So you, was it a skeptics convention you went to?
Yeah, I go to a few skeptics conventions. Next one I'm going to is probably in October. I think my birthday is on Wednesday, so I'm thinking of buying a
skeptic
ticket to that one in October.
Where this convention? Where?
Los Angeles.
Oh, what's the name of it? I mean,
I forget the name of it, but they're going to do Steve Allen. He did this old television show where he got famous figures.
Meeting of the Minds.
Meeting of the Minds, yeah. And they're going to do a reproduction of it, so I just want to go see the reproduction.
Okay.
But even that's like another $400 to go to Atlanta.
These things are cheap. Nope. There are a couple shots I really like here, and for one thing, because Richard Dawkins and, you know, the quote-unquote new atheists, whether or not you agree with them, you know, it's like they have a curmudgeon-y sort of, you know, I guess, people think of them, you know, I don't know, being grumpy or something. So I was really happy about the fact I got a couple of him laughing. Now if I can just find those. Like they're not, you know, he's friendly. Come on, he's a pretty friendly guy. Yeah, he's kind of, you know, he's a little hard about some things, but, you know, it's not like he doesn't. I mean, you got to appreciate somebody who's got pink flamingos on his tie, right?
Oh, yeah.
PZ Myers is another one with crazy ties. It's kind of striking to me that.
Those flamingos or ladybugs?
Flamingos. Yeah, it's just hard to tell with the resolution here. And these are, I don't know. This was killing me afterwards. It's like, oh, why didn't I see that plastic bag that Richard took on stage with him before this? You know, it's just, yeah, I can fix it in Photoshop. It's like, oh, the plastic bag. Now anytime I look at that picture, the only thing I see is the plastic bag. But anyway, so yeah, Richard will wrap up here in a moment. And the one thing that I'll just end with is what took place, because, yeah, this is Saturday. So, yeah, this is the last thing Saturday. I'm just going to have to flip through. I'll just explain this real briefly because it's just a good example tying in with the conversation or topic we were just talking about before. This was not a proposal for this. There's a woman who appeared Sunday evening, last night of the conference, who wasn't looking to try and get the $1 million. She didn't meet the criterion somehow, but basically she approached JREF, I guess, and said, hey, I have this power. Of all things, she thought, well, I guess there are stranger things, but, and that's not her, that's Allison Smith, who is on JREF's staff. But she's a young, very blonde, fair woman from Sweden, so you'll know her when you see her in a minute, who thought that she really had this ability to tell if somebody something was medically wrong with somebody, specifically if they were missing an organ. Now that sounds really bizarre, and I have to say it is, but at least from my point of view. But, you know, it's kind of an example of this person believes that they can do something, and she came here to be part of this program, and they called it a test. It wasn't going to be like her being part of the $1 million challenge. It wasn't meeting those criteria or whatever the case might be. But she was going to do this test that she did in front of this room full of skeptics with all these other skeptics on stage and whatnot. And that's what you'll see in just a minute. That's Banachek, a magician on the left. I think the bald gentleman is also a magician. And actually DJ Gropey is as well. So there are a lot of magicians in this movement for whatever reason. But I'll flip forward because, like I said, I know that you normally wrap up.
So what happened when she, she do her thing?
She did her thing and she, well, short answer is she was wrong. There were 5 or 6 people on stage.
They told that they had an organ missing?
Well, okay, there she is. So, in any case, Banachek, the man with the microphone there right now, is, I think, explaining how this is working and that sort of thing. And the people on the right are 5 volunteers, one of whom actually is missing a kidney.
Oh.
And Anita, the young lady there, she's from Sweden. I don't know how she somehow decided to come to Vegas to do this test, actually. But she was going to try and show everybody that she really could do this. So, you know, they had decided on the protocol ahead of time, and basically she sat there, concentrated, visualized. She said that if she focused on somebody, she could kind of visualize what was wrong or not wrong with their body or whatever the case might be. So she took about 6 minutes per person like concentrating on that person. The room, if you can picture this, this room that seats 1,300 people at, you know, it was Sunday, some people had already gone home, so it wasn't, you know, maybe we had 800 in the room. The room was silent while she's concentrating. So that's kind of what she's doing, or she would concentrate on one person for 6 minutes, then explain a little bit what she was doing, take a question or two from the audience, and then would go back and concentrate on the next person. Room of 800 people, or however many, were silent. I mean, it was really very fascinating, I thought. I mean, just that she was willing to do this. She really put herself out there.
Yeah.
And that the entire audience cooperated. And even at the very end, when, you know, the people, you know, well, at least Vanacek, who had the microphone, I think he would know who the person was who didn't have the kidney. But she guessed wrong, and yeah, I mean, she got it wrong. And I think this is her finding out now. She read the paper at this point where they had marked the answer down, and then this is kind of the, I don't know, the post-analysis, or, you know, it's the analysis afterwards.
Yeah.
I thought they were kind of interesting shoes too. In any case, it was number two who's missing the kidney.
Was she specifically asked who was missing the kidney?
Yes.
Or which?
Was she told which organ it was?
She was told which organ it was, and whether she was to guess whether it was a right or left kidney. And I guess most of the time, if somebody's missing a kidney for whatever reason, has to do with medical reasons, it's a left kidney. Like, if you donate a kidney, usually they would go for the left.
You said that she spent 6 minutes on each person?
On each person. So, and the room was completely silent.
Were all the people were turned away from her when she was supposedly concentrating?
They just sat in those chairs.
So she couldn't do a trick of trying to read somebody's body language or demeanor or whatever?
She happened to, what, and this is cycling over, this is volunteers at the very beginning. In any case.
Did she see that anybody had... was missing anything else? I mean, in 2 minutes, I could tell you that 50% of everybody over the age of 50 didn't have tonsils on their
face. After 30 minutes, if they had been drinking coffee, I might be able to spot the question. I was missing a kidney. I'm just saying. Who was missing a limb?
She ended up choosing the person who was most fidgety. And that's what everybody notices, like, well, he's the one who's fidgeting. And, you know,
so that's the signals that she was picking up from
him. Yeah, I guess. And actually, she seems to have a condition called synesthesia, where you associate visual things with colors that aren't actually part of what you're seeing.
Right.
And that's what she was describing as well. So,
and that's a legit thing. I mean,
yeah. And she realized even that she had it, but she was, for whatever reason, describing, you know, that there was additional meaning to this condition or whatever. And she's a college student. She's studying physics. She's not dumb at all. And actually, maybe I'll just wrap it up with tying that into one last statement. What I found especially striking even at that point, or especially at that point when it was found out that she had guessed incorrectly, and that, I mean, she put herself out there on a stage. She sincerely believed she had this power. She wanted to show these skeptics that, yes, you know, I can do this.
But don't you think there's I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Don't you think that she was actually probably had pretty good odds? I mean, one chance in six of being right. And if she just so happened by strict luck to be right, she could put out a press release and take some nice pictures of her saying, I beat the skeptics, and put this on the wire services worldwide.
And if she loses, the Swedish press weren't there in droves.
If she loses, nobody's going to cover it. But if she wins, she's going to put out press releases on the internet, on YouTube, all over the world. So it was a good shot for her.
You know, if I'm not mistaken, she doesn't charge money for this.
She will.
She wasn't a cynic. She really truly believed.
She really believed. And she actually understood. I mean, she was there with a gentleman who was a skeptic. He's like from Atlanta, and they were an item. I mean, she really had belief. I don't know. And she was really pretty well versed in the language of skepticism. I mean, she was using all the right keywords. Her English was excellent. I mean, she had a hint of an accent. But, you know, I mean, she understood where we were coming from, but she still was convinced. Enough to put herself up in front of 800 skeptics and be allowed the chance to get it wrong, that she had this power. And so, you know, I don't know if she would have put out press releases or not, who knows. Perhaps, but yeah.
My experience with the ones I've been to is they do often have somebody who comes in. Mm-hmm. Most of them are really true believers and have had a long history of writing and stuff like that. I remember a case, for example, a professor in Yale or Harvard who had become fairly convinced about UFOs.
Yeah.
Oh,
so at this conference, what they did is they had him talk, but then they had two journalists who basically went out there, said they were UFO abductees, and he swallowed a hook, line, and sinker without doing any cross-checking or whatever, stand up after his talk and basically tell his story about what happened, that they didn't, that this guy did nothing to cross-check on a story or whatever they were doing. And that was their method, but yeah, I mean, he was such a true believer, he had to say that even though these journalists didn't believe they were abducted, they were really abducted because they had a story down there. So I mean, he was such a believer to that point that he, you know, stayed that night. But they often get that, I mean.
I noticed you have some pictures of these skeptics at the gambling tables. Do you suppose they did any better than maybe you are?
Better than average. I don't know. One of them is Hemant Mehta. He's got a blog called Friendly Atheist. So if you're kind of linked into that group, I just thought it was kind of fun. Apparently, he's a serious poker player. So I have no idea how they did there.
Oh, I have a question. So this Swedish woman, who she did everything. How did the audience react when she was proven wrong? Were they really respectful to her still, or
they
why did they react?
And that was actually the point I wanted to make at the very conclusion here. They applauded.
They did.
Respectfully.
Good.
And I think, I mean, you know, again, tying in a little bit with the previous topics, you know, that Phil Plate and some of Massimo, you know, addressed, you know, as a movement, we want to be inclusive. You don't win people over if you call them stupid.
Yeah.
Or, you know, why do you believe this? She was so obviously convinced she really had this power, and put herself out there, you know, being willing to be found out that she was wrong in front of this, you know, crowd of 800 or so people. If you would have been there, I think you would have sensed the sincerity on her part.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she thought she could do this, and
she
failed. I mean, she chose the wrong person, and she was also asked to perhaps identify, is it left or right or right side? Left side or right side where the kidney is missing, she got that wrong. I mean, it was pretty much, you know, a strikeout.
There's two types you basically have to sort of work at. One is the true believers, and one is the con men. Randy went after a lot of the con men, but there's also the true believers, so that's why people like Sherman, right, why people believe weird things and start telling their stories about the... you think about your daughter and you get a phone call, then you think your psychic can figure out when your daughter's going to call you.
Yeah.
Sort of behavior, and it's just a coincidence. So,
mm-hmm.
With the true believers, if you want to get them to change their minds, screaming your head off at them isn't going to help much.
No.
Respectful debate is far better way to go. On the other hand, if you get a con man, making the total fun of a con man is, you know.
Oh, that's legit.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
The trick is making sure you get the right one.
Yeah.
What's pareidolia?
It's seeing images and patterns where there is nothing.
Oh,
so, I mean, yeah, Virgin Mary.
Or the angel Moroni or something.
Yeah, some Moroni.
That was how Mormons were founded, the vision of Joseph Smith. Yeah.
If you go to a Mormon temple, you'll see on top of the spire an angel blowing a trumpet. That's Moroni.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not Michael, I thought Michael had a trumpet too.
That was it.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't have a physiological explanation.
So this is one of your favorite photos of your fellow...
You know, aside from Richard Dawkins' plastic bag under the chair, the other thing that drove me craziest as a photographer was the bottled water.
Oh, yeah.
Get that out of there next year.
Best giving and a round of applause. Thank you.